Pre-recorded live from League Express HQ, the Total Rugby League show returns for yet more rugby league discussion and lovely debate. And joining me here this week, Alex Davis is here, Matthew Shaw is here.
Howdy.
With us sometime, ish.
And Aaron Bauer. What do you mean, ish?
And Aaron Bauer is back, everybody.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. And
you seen that?
That is a tan.
It's a serious tan.
Yeah, you say, have you seen that on a podcast?
Great radio.
Not good.
Yeah. Yeah,
listen. It's good radio, though.
It really is. Anyway, hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's show. A usual Super League Championship and League One chatter coming up over the course of the next 60 minutes or so. We'll also be joined by Mike Rylance for a bit of Continental Corner. But speaking of continents, let's go down south to Origin. Alex, you watched it, so no one else had to. What was it like?
Well, it was a decider, and as they said on the commentary, every game has a different feel, and the decider is, again, different to what we've seen before. And it came down to the last minute, which is what you want from those kind of games, and Blake Ferguson broke down the right and gave it to Tedesco, who scored his second for the win. It was pleasing to see Queensland turn up, which they certainly didn't in the second game. And they made it a really, really interesting game. They defended their way to a point where they could have won the game, and perhaps they should have done. Maybe they could have kicked a penalty in that last minute if the referees had given a penalty for something that could well have been. Overall, I was really impressed with the game, and certainly ANZ Stadium looked fantastic with 83,000 people in it.
Well, congratulations to New South Wales and commiserations to Queensland.
Absolutely.
And, we move on. But there'll be a match report in League Express next week.
Yes, there will indeed.
Excellent stuff. Well, thanks for joining us, Alex.
Headphones down. I'm off.
No, we need you back for Castleford in a second, don't we? Now, there's some other issues and matters arising which we should talk about before we get to the Super League preview. Firstly, Championship clubs wanting to find a neutral venue for the playoff final. You've just come. Where did you go?
I went to a place called Toronto.
Toronto.
I kept it low key, really.
Mm. I mean, what's their take on all this? Because I'm assuming you brought it up.
They're in the dark, to be honest. I was asked three or four times where the grand final being played. I went, well, don't know. It's typical of rugby league. I mean, I think we should give these clubs time. At the end of the day, it's only July. We don't need to make a decision yet on like this, you know. League restructures are normally decided in September. So why are we we don't need to worry about a game yet, do we?
How much is involved in this story, do you think? How far down the line are we?
Look, the whole thing's a farce, if I'm completely honest. The rules, which were picked up by Aaron, it says in the operational rules, that unless the RFL determines otherwise, the games will be played at the highest placed team, which, in most, the largest likelihood is going to be Toronto, you'd think. The clubs don't want it there, basically. That's the long and short. They do not want it there. They won't come out and openly say it, but they don't, for whatever reason. Now, David Langlo was on Backchat last week, and he said it will be brought up at a championship meeting, which is taking place as we speak. This story came out, and then York went on their own official Twitter and said it's not even on the agenda. What is going on? What is going on? It's a farce. It's a complete and utter farce. My take on it, I think it should be a neutral venue, personally. I think it should be an event.
But that should be next year now.
But make the decision at the start, either at the start of this season, before a ball's been kicked, or make it now for next season.
I mean, it's pretty obvious Toronto were going to be competing this year in a significant way, wasn't it? It wasn't like it was going to be a big surprise. No. But we'll keep an eye on that.
I understand, like, take Lee for example. So they play Toronto in the last 2 weeks of the regular season. If the fixtures fall a certain way, they could have to travel to Toronto three times in 6 weeks. I get why that's a problem. 100%, no dispute from me, they shouldn't have to do that. But this should have been, like many things, foreseen and preempted before we get to July. That's what we always seem to do this. Wrong.
Well, as Matthew said, that meeting is taking place this week. TotalRL.com, the place to go for all the breaking news, if there is any news from that. But we'll keep an eye on it. But we'll come back to the championship shortly. Let's talk about Super League, and we're getting down to the nitty gritty now, aren't we? Very much so. Round 21 last weekend, round 22. I was going to say, Aaron, this weekend, but that's not strictly true, is it? Because the games are all happening on Thursday and Friday, which seems a bit
mad.
It is mad.
Why
have we got to this stage?
I assume part of it is short turnaround inspired, I assume. But then, just having a look down the games this week, Huddersfield, Leeds, St Helens, all certainly prefer to play their home games on Friday nights, don't they? Wakefield, not so much. I don't know what the Thursday game is next week. Does anyone know off the top of their head what the Thursday game is?
Pretty sure it's Wigan-Wakefield.
Right, okay. So that rules Wakefield-Cass out of being anything but Friday. Warrington-Salford, could they have moved that to Sunday? Maybe, I don't know. But the issue is that, you know, when you're trying to get as much coverage and sort of spread the competition as thinly as you can across the week to give maximum impact, we're only playing six games across 2 days, which is wrong, really, isn't it? We've got to find a way through it. I know some people are saying that the way out of it is to get rid of the Thursday game, but I don't agree with that. I think Thursdays has got its place. I think it's good on the calendar. We've got to have a look at the scheduling, though, because...
But it doesn't make any sense for a TV audience, does it? If all rugby league
thing about matches. If you were to say no more than two games are on Friday night, then this week alone you're going to get six sets of supporters who are watching the game on Sky and boosting the numbers for Sky. It's like, I think we had the conversation earlier, me and Matt, that the Premier League generally, you know, most games, there's a game early Saturday, a game late Saturday, games on Sunday. There's very rarely clashes, is there? You know, Saturday 3 o'clock is the staple time everyone plays, which for us is Sunday 3 o'clock. Everyone else is watching the games live on telly. It just feels like you're shooting yourself in the foot with both the viewing numbers and the lack of games on a weekend is frightening.
This is the problem. Aaron's hit the nail on the head there. We've got this stupid idea about turnarounds, which, well, it doesn't matter, because if everyone was playing on Sundays, it would make no difference. The problem the Thursday game has created is if you're playing Thursday, yes, the teams that are playing on the Sunday then have a distinct disadvantage. So that's why they try and push them forward now, which is why we see less weekend games. But at the same time, Aaron said it, you don't see Premier League games clashing with TV. And if they do, they're normally available on a red button, aren't they? So on a Sunday in the afternoon, there can be occasional clash. It's just damaging itself. The sport's damaging itself and the TV. We don't have a big audience. And then when you've got all these other games taking place at the same time as your TV game, your TV audience will go down. That is absolutely dead set certain. So it's just thick. Again, it's a problem. And do we even have to discuss this whole Saints-Wigan debate about them?
I wasn't going to even bring it up.
For the end of the day, my take on it, on that, just quickly, which game would I rather see this Friday on TV? Leeds-Hull KR, Wigan Saints. It'd be Leeds-Hull KR because there's more riding on it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
If
Wigan make the playoffs, then that adds a bit more spice to that game.
You're almost creating a bit of demand for it, aren't you? I mean, they've played each other three times already this season, haven't they?
Well, that's an argument in itself.
Problem, isn't it? Playing the games too many times. I mean, this is the third time Wakefield Castle played. It's the same for everyone else.
And the thing that's important to remember as well is Sky made this decision 2 or 3 weeks ago when Leeds Hull KR was a monumental size game. And Wigan were sort of lower mid table.
If you were nitpicking, you'd question why they're showing Hull London over Wigan Saints. I don't think that's really that isn't an argument that's been brought up. But when all's said and done, I know that, I think it was Justin Holbrook who said in a piece with Gareth Walker about you wouldn't see Man United and Man City be neglected to Burnley and Cardiff or whatever it was, but Leeds are basically the most successful team in Super League era. If Man United were at the bottom and Chelsea Arsenal was on, they would be going for Man United. That's just a matter of fact.
Leeds is the story, and you know, I'm probably gonna get some grief for this, but I'm not sure. I think there's a feeling with St Helens and Wigan that, you know, everyone cares about that, the result of that fixture, but I don't want to sound like I'm sort of getting on top of Saints and Wigan fans here, but outside of those two sets of supporters, I don't think anyone really cares too much about the outcome of that game. You know, it's a big game in the context of a season.
It's a big game for Wigan,
and you know, again, I don't want to trivialise it in St Helens' case, but it's pretty inconsequential for St Helens, this game. There's not a lot riding on it for them, whereas Leeds and Hull KR, this is a massive game.
And when the decision was made, Wigan were what, seventh in the league? Eighth in the league?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Saints were running away with it.
Leeds didn't have Rob Lewis.
Yeah, it genuinely wasn't that appealing. No. It wasn't. Saints, for me, aren't an appealing TV attraction, which is outrageous, because in terms of entertainment, they are wonderful and comfortable, the best team to watch, but it's not the story at the minute because of that.
Get Saints Wigan in the playoffs as a result of this as well. Everyone will be looking forward to a little bit more.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, let's go to the Friday night game then, and Leeds against Hull KR. It is the big game this weekend. Before we get to matters on the pitch, Richard Agar is starting to look a bit more comfortable, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think numerous people on the show have said he doesn't want the job.
Yeah.
Is he growing into that job?
Possibly. I think.
I mean, we've all gone to parties where we initially arrive and go, I'm not enjoying this. And then you're the last one to leave at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Little insight there to the youth.
Yeah. I think they should give him it. I do. I'll put my neck on the line. And obviously, they're going to get beat by 30 by OKR on Friday now, aren't they? But I think they should give him the job. I think the difference he's made defensively in them is significant. I think they're only conceding a couple of tries a game, you know, in recent weeks. Friday, I thought the defensively, the opening hour, Castleford absolutely battered them, albeit if Castleford had a little bit more in terms of a Truman or a Gale out there, they might have been able to unlock them. But Leeds defensively were outstanding. And the players have bought into it. You know, I spoke to Merrin after the game. He says, why not? You know, why isn't you? Maybe he's worth a crack at this gig. And it's fascinating how it's all come about that Rich has been very vocal that he didn't want it, but...
You know. That's how you turn a team around. You start with the defence. That's how when you're only conceding a couple of tries a game, you can win games by scoring 18 points as Leeds did at the weekend. Whereas if you're conceding 20 odd points, you won't win those games.
That was the big thing, wasn't it? At the start of the year, their line defence was
terrible.
Absolutely, yes,
terrible.
And for players, when you defend your line, you get a massive buzz out of it, and that'll help them. You build from the back.
They're not going to go down. That much is absolutely
obvious. I was going to come to you, Alex, because obviously you know you're a Castleford fan, mm-hmm. and you know Castleford are outside the playoffs now, but only just.
Rub it in.
No, I'm saying Castleford.
Oh, don't worry, we'll get to
I was about to tee up the fact that Castleford are playoff contenders.
Well, of course they are. Yeah, of course they are.
And
yeah.
Leeds.
Leeds are currently 6 points outside.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of teams in between. But if they go on a big run, there's no reason why they can't do it.
But that's exactly what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to go on a monumental.
It will have to be a big run. There are probably too many teams in between. But that's something that Leeds can do is not look down, look up.
They would have to win 6 of their last 8
Leeds,
to have a chance.
I think the reality is what we've learnt from this season is there's no point in trying to make sweeping.
No.
Statements like that because if they lose this weekend, we're talking about them being in relegation.
And I mean, to be honest, there's no point in predicting any of the games. So all of them are just ridiculously unpredictable.
We don't do that on this show.
Yeah.
I've
given up doing it. I'm not doing it anymore.
I'm not having this scoreboard business at the end of the shows and stuff like that.
A shout out to the poor media who have to make a tipping comp. Like, do the tips at the start of the season.
You don't have to do the tipping competition.
When you do your... you have to make your predictions at the start of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, my predictions have... Yeah,
turned out nice. So,
yeah. I did say St Helens have finished top. Well, I said they beat Leeds in the grand final.
Just a quick mention for Hull KR. That was quite a hefty defeat at the weekend, but they're still there, aren't they?
But again, you know, I said it about London before. I think it's very much a case of picking and choosing your battles with Hull KR. Wigan away, they were probably never likely to get much out of it. Sort of margin of scoreline is probably concerning to some OKR fans. Their season isn't going to be defined by Wigan away. I think there are bigger battles to come for OKR. I think Huddersfield next week, is that right?
I think what you can say is that if they were to lose this week, the regardless of what the scoreline is, that would be more concerning than the defeat to Wigan last week.
On Thursday night, Hull, and the thing is they'll know the result of this game, won't they, Hull KR? Yeah. Hull taking on the London Broncos. That's the TV game.
No, they're not going to lose to London.
No.
Not at Hull.
Is there a chance?
I don't think
Hull
so.
Hull are pretty good at home, aren't they? And London have built what they've done on the back of their home form. So for them to go to Hull, I think, will be a tough ask for them.
It's a big weekend then for Hull KR in London because they could be cut adrift for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, they could be. But it's all ifs, isn't it? This is the thing. We are purely speculating.
Oh, God, yeah, big
we
time.
We are purely speculating. I mean, I've just said that we're not making tips, and I'm saying, no, they won't go and win at Hull. I mean, who knows? You can never tell with Hull. But like Aaron said about Hull KR, I don't think Hull away is a game that's going to define whether London stay up or not. I think it's a bigger week for Hull KR than it is for London. I think that's
without
fair.
Doubt. Yeah,
it's quite a big evening as well for Hull FC, because they could not seal the playoffs in the right word, but they could make it.
It's
a bit what, more
it's one step closer,
yes,
isn't it?
Definitely.
And if they take that step, you know, the 26
especially
points.
If Wakefield beat Cass, it then becomes 6 points, doesn't it?
Mm. But the other thing as well is, you know, Hull have lost a couple as well, so it's a big week in that sense. You know, the minute you lose three games on the bounce, you become concerned. So they'll be looking to avoid that.
Another team who will know the result of Hull FC versus London is Huddersfield, and on Friday night, Huddersfield take on Catalan Dragons. I mean, there was a rumour started. I don't know who started this rumour, but apparently Huddersfield are now on the lookout for a new fullback. I don't know if that's something that can be discussed now.
More good
if you want, yeah. Matt, I mean, Matt's pointing at me as if it's not true.
I'm not saying it's not true.
There we go.
I've not said anything.
It's about as good an admission of good
Aaron,
work.
What do you understand?
They are monitoring Ryan Hampshire in particular. Ryan Hampshire's future at Wakefield is looking more and more unlikely as the weeks go on. They've signed Alex Walker. The deal they offered him expired. The offer lapsed, so Wakefield pulled it. As I understand it, as of right now, they aren't offering another one. As of right now, no deal is on the table. They may well offer him something at some point, but they're not right now, and Huddersfield are aware of it. Thought it was interesting that sort of got wind of that Thursday time, and within a few hours I've gone to Salford Huddersfield and I've seen Darnell McIntosh play centre.
Yeah.
And Wolford is admitting in the press conference that McIntosh is an option all across the back line for them, which pretty much reaffirmed in my mind that, yeah, they are definitely looking for a fullback then. And you know, McIntosh has got a lot to offer them across the back line, but they are looking for an out-and-out one. Hampshire fits the bill. I think he's a good player. I think he's got something to offer a club like Huddersfield. His playing time would be severely limited at Wakefield, you'd have to say, because they will go with Walker and they'll invest heavily in Walker. And you'd think Brough and Miller isn't going to be untouched next season. So yeah, so I think it fits. You know, I'm not saying I wrote it because it fits. I'm wrote it because I understand they're interested. But you know, on Huddersfield, just over the last month, and I know I'm sound like a broken record to Matt here. Over the last month or last 3 weeks, I've seen something in Leeds, Huddersfield, and Hull KR that makes me think they'll get enough points to stay up. I'm not sure I've seen enough in London. I just think there's a bit of a mentality shift now with London, that the first 5 months of the season was very much a free hit for them. But now there's 8 games left. Now the pressure's on. People are actually giving them a chance.
Well, it's interesting.
So hang on. You haven't seen enough in London. They beat St Helens. They went to Catalans and thumped them.
I don't think they beat St Helens in the last month,
and they
did
beat
they?
Hull KR, yeah.
Well, 3 weeks three or something. Since that Hull KR win.
Well, Huddersfield were...
They've only had two defeats since that.
The Huddersfield win at the weekend, that was...
I've seen more from the rest. I've seen more from the rest since then.
At the time when they beat Hull KR...
Do you not think Hull KR winning the derby?
At the time they beat Hull KR, I'd seen a lot of improvement in London and Hull KR and not really seeing anything in Leeds. Since then, Leeds have certainly improved. But you can say that, but what did Hull KR didn't set the world
I think the bottom three will be Hull KR, Huddersfield and London.
It's interesting. I mean, we're speaking about transfer speculation now of Huddersfield, but Corey Ashton, Aaron, you've written he's potentially being linked with London.
Very close
bit
to
bit of confidence from London there for them to even consider that, really. I mean, is that for next season?
Yeah, it's for next season, yeah.
Or to free the salary cap up for...
No, it's for next season. It's pretty close as well. I imagine it'll end up being a done deal.
Well, I think that's a recognition of what Aston have done.
He's done a good job.
He's not going to set the world alight, but he's been put into that team and he's done well for himself. And that's what he's earned a Super League chance with Cass.
I agree.
And I think he's done well with what he's got.
There's another player who's there's a question mark over him, and this goes back to Tony Gigo. He's still not signed,
but he's interesting.
And he had a cracking game last week, I thought.
And he's made it clear he wants to stay, hasn't he, in this interview with Linda Pendant.
And the problem is, it's all right in wanting to stay, though. But when I was told he rejected a contract, I was told that they'd offered him a 6-figure annual salary. If he's rejecting that but wants to stay, then what's he expecting from them? What sort of money is he being unrealistic in his demands? Potentially.
Based on that performance against Wakefield, though, he's
a class act.
He's class
a trophy winner.
is a class act, but Catalans don't have the biggest amount of caps. I mean, they just physically can't when
also
you look
got
at the
a very good English fullback as well as a very good French fullback.
You know, I don't know. I think it might be being a little bit unrealistic.
So Hull FC against London, Leeds against Hull KR, Huddersfield against Catalans. Are we going to get any closer, do you think, by the end of this weekend about saying, I know, Aaron, you're nearly there.
I've said it. I do think London will end up being the weakest team over 29 rounds. It's not because I think they're a poor side. It's because I think they will just be the worst of 12. I think by this weekend, I think you'll be able to cross Leeds' name out with some confidence.
It's going to come down to form. We've seen it with Leeds. They're in form. Huddersfield, after their win, they were really impressive, are in form. And to be honest, if they stay up this year, the future looks bright for them. Look at that back line. They've got the two senior twins, Darnell McIntosh, Matty English, Oliver Wilson. They've got
In terms of which team it's important that they stay up more than anything, it is Huddersfield, because they are building a team that, I said on the show a few weeks ago, in 2-3 years' time, that will genuinely be a force in this competition. It's not only that, it's
their academy line is churning these players out. They're not getting them from anywhere else.
I tell you what, they don't get anywhere near enough recognition for the, because they're nearly all homegrown. What I would say about Huddersfield, I think it's a massive game for them, a huge game for them. Catalans aren't in form. I know, well, they won at the weekend, didn't they? They beat Wakefield.
The Giants will be looking at this game thinking, we need to win this.
They do need to.
And Catalans need to win as well, don't they?
Well, they do.
That's because they're chasing the playoffs.
If you exclude Saints and Warrington, I think every team needs to win.
Well, that brings me to the other three games this weekend. We might as well go to Saints against Wigan. Justin Holbrook talking about energy. The energy of his signing.
Yeah,
last week,
well, that's what it's going to come down to with Saints, because they're going to make the top five, but are they going to be in the top five in form? They need to go into that running and jumping, because too often we've seen sides dominate the league, probably tail off a little bit towards the end because the job's done. And then when you get down to the crunch games, you've got players that are slightly low on confidence that might have been a bit higher on confidence throughout the season. It's about timing that run into the playoffs.
And timing their run really well is Adrian Lamb's side, and we spoke about Richard Agar, and Lamb deserves this, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that he nailed his colours to the mast in the opening 5 or 6 weeks, and he could have quite easily sort of watered down his promise that Wigan were going to come good by the summer, but he said it week in, week out when they were getting beat every week, and he was right, wasn't he? You know, there was always a suspicion that if Hardacre, as an example, got to grips with playing regularly again, and it was always going to take him a bit of time, Wigan would start to improve. Williams, I would imagine you'll probably start to see the best of Williams now all this is out in the open about Canberra, and it'll just free him up. There'll be less pressure, less eyes on him. They're a dangerous team. They are a dangerous team. I still think they are a little bit below Hull and a significant bit below the other two, but they look like a top five team at the minute, and fair play to Adrian Lamb, because 6 weeks ago they looked like they had no chance for the
I think Lamb's done a really good job with Hardacre. Hardacre's playing well, but it's almost like he's going under the radar a bit this year. He's just doing everything right at the moment, and not doing anything wrong, just doing all the simple things right.
I don't think Hardacre's been bad all year. I think he's been safe all season, to be honest.
But the wins are starting to come.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Salford. That match against Huddersfield.
Well, they started well, didn't they?
They did start well. I mean, Ian Watson wasn't holding back, was he, in his comments after the
match? They've done this a few times now where they've started like ours. I remember in the Challenge Cup when they played Hull KR. Were they 18-0 up?
Yeah.
And lost. You know, 18-0 up in like 16 minutes. So there's a bit of an issue there.
If they don't make the playoffs, will there be a look back and go, and from Salford going, oh, we could have got that, couldn't we?
I don't think they'll be the only team. I think nearly every team in Super League will look at, if they don't make the top five this year, as a missed opportunity.
Well, yeah, you go all the way down to Wakefield in eighth. The teams that finish sixth, seventh, and eighth will, like Matt says, view it as a missed opportunity.
But even Huddersfield.
No, even Huddersfield are in a different fight now, aren't they?
They are at the minute, but if they win this weekend, they're not. If they win this weekend, you would assume that they'll be nearer, you know, they'll be near to the playoffs.
Well, there'll be 2 points within Catalans, won't they?
You know?
Luther Burrell played. How did he do at Warrington?
Good, apparently. Yeah, strong, physical, tough. Yeah, I think he'll be a good asset for them.
What do you think then for Warrington v Salford? There's Salford away from home are quite.
Well, they hammered them over Easter at Warrington, didn't they? Salford are one of the great enigmas out of this year.
It depends which Salford turns up. We can say that about all the teams. It depends which Hull FC turn up or Catalan. They're all the same.
Yeah. I think that Warrington, I know that Aaron said a minute ago that Wigan are a bit off Hull and quite a way off the other two. I think Warrington are nearer to Hull than they are to Saints. I think Warrington are gettable for most teams in the league. If they play well, I do think that. I know if Warrington play well, they can be, but they don't need top
four. I think it was Gary Schofield that said in his column, if you stop Blair Costin, you stop Warrington. And that's probably not too far
it's
off.
Kind of what Saints did, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's the thing with teams. Some of them are very based around one player. And Warrington have got some great players, but Austin is key to how they work. And if you do stop him, then you have a significantly better chance of beating them.
Going to come back to you now, Alex. Last game to talk about for Super League this weekend, Wakefield against Castleford. Apparently there's going to be no Brough, no Fifita.
Well, that's a big boost for Cass if it's true. Because Brough is obviously key for them, and Fifita is just such a monster up front. If you can deal with Fifita, you deal with Wakefield's go forward, and then Brough obviously can't do anything off the back of it. Mm. So Fifita is key for them, and of course Cass have Truman back, which I think it was a big miss against Leeds, because he just gives us that little bit of cutting edge. His short kicking game is sublime. And of course Matautia will be able to go back to his normal fullback position, and the span will be a bit more settled for Cass.
Realistically, Alex, is it Castleford's now to lose when it comes to the playoffs, assuming Catalan's form keeps misfiring?
Well, it's not ours to lose because we're not in it at the moment. But it can certainly be ours to lose. I mean, last week we were fourth, this week we were sixth. The week before the fourth we were seventh. It can change all within 1 week. So I still think it is up for us to get into that top five. I think the teams in front are certainly gettable for Cass. It just requires us to put a little bit more effort in and get some good results and pull ourselves up the table.
And it's an important game for Wakefield as well to keep in touch with those playoff spots.
They're always big, those games, aren't they, Cass-Wakefield? There's been a lot of history in the past 10 or so years of huge games between the sides, and Cass have obviously dominated it of late, but Wakefield are certainly catching Cass up at the minute.
Well, that's our look at the Super League. Let's talk about the Championship, and someone went to Toronto at the...
Who were that?
You, apparently. I don't know. It was you going to Toronto and Mick Gledhill going to Toulouse. It was like...
Oh, Mick's all right, by the way.
It was like... Oh, yeah, but best wishes to Mick. The Twitter feed, my Twitter feed, was like, wish you were here back in the day with Judith Chalmers. How was your trip?
Very good. Very, very good. Went as a fan, effectively. Went as a fan with the family. Went through Divine Sport. A great time.
Did they ask you to do that?
No. if they'd have asked me to plug it, I wouldn't have been paying for my trip, would I?
Why are you dropping names? Anyway, tell us about your trip to Toronto.
Well, what do you want to know?
Well,
when did you come back?
Landed back Tuesday morning.
Good. Right, next game.
How were the paper cutouts of supporters?
You know what? I tell you what.
3D now, I believe.
Some serious technology advancements in North America for those cutouts to be. They even drink excessive alcohol.
Joking aside, Halifax got beer again.
Yeah,
just six on the bounce. See that then? Now I've brought down the mood. Quick.
You know what?
Down.
It was
down.
It was an awful game. The game itself was actually the worst part of the trip. Both teams were awful. I think Toronto completed just under 40%. The problem was the players were saying it was 36 degrees or something, so the ball was obviously very sweaty. Because there's no dirt and no mud, you just can't keep holding the ball. So I think there were seven incomplete sets on the bounce. It just wasn't a good game to watch. But that's
something they'll need to fix up if they get into Super League Toronto. Yeah, they can't go into Super League games completing 40%. No, they'll get massacred.
Three words. Halifax versus Widnes. What a huge game that is.
Why?
Eh? Why?
Yeah.
Well, Widnes need a win.
Yeah. Right.
So that makes it a big game by default. It's on our league.
Right.
Big game. Halifax have lost how many in a row?
Six league games on the bounce.
It's a big game. It's a big game, mate.
Why, though?
Well,
why?
Because Halifax is slowly.
No,
you're quiet.
Well, Aaron's got it in his head that Halifax could get relegated.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, you... Alex, what's he been going on about in the office for weeks?
Can I just clarify?
No idea.
For weeks in the office, I've been saying if they're not careful, Halifax could get dragged into a relegation battle. Not that they will get relegated. There is a clear difference between the two. Wakefield, if they lose this weekend, could get dragged into a relegation battle. Wakefield will not get relegated. There's a clear difference, Matt. If Halifax lose this weekend...
Okay.
Well, Swinton could easily turn Bradford over. Swinton are playing fantastic at the moment.
Are Halifax going to go down?
No.
Right, well, it's not a topic then, is it?
Well, end of discussion.
The trip itself was good.
Let's stop talking about Halifax and start talking about teams who are in the mix for promotion.
We're talking about Toronto, who are in the mix. It was good fun. I know there are financial costs. It's not cheap. But I think you've got to go to get it. I don't think you can truly grasp what they're doing if you don't go.
It's good that you got to go because, like, obviously next year it'll be like West Wales and Keighley and stuff like it. So it's good, good experience.
The Netflix is lovely.
Glad.
Yeah. Anyway, York City Knights moved into second with an epic 23 points to 16 win over Sheffield.
That's incredible.
That is 2 points clear into second now. That's
crazy. Yeah. I just
interesting that James Ford, who was definitely going to Hull KR, is now definitely not going to Hull KR. Funny that. Yeah.
Featherstone showed up their playoff bid by edging past Lee, which is a great result for Featherstone. Mm. While Bradford moved 2 points from the playoffs with an excellent win at Toulouse.
That's an incredible. I tell you what.
At night.
Toulouse. Quite as good in general this year.
Swinton went there.
They lost to Swinton, they've lost to Widnes, and they've lost to Bradford.
Those conditions, you're thinking Bradford could get rolled big style here.
Just a bunch of blokes from West Yorkshire.
Yeah. I've got Sylvain in my head talking to me a few weeks ago. They have got injuries at the moment and players' availability
issues
and stuff. I think
they're probably keeping something in reserve as well for the playoffs, I suspect. But
well, they need to finish second, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just on Bradford, it's all hypothetical, but if they would have had Joe Keys all year, they'd have probably got at least a couple more wins, wouldn't they? He's been very, unbelievable very since he's come back.
Good egg as well, spoke to him last week.
They've got a good issue, in that they've got Lily Keys and Milnes.
Milnes is out for a long time, though, and he broke his leg.
They said 8 weeks, though. So that was Challenge Cup.
So there's a month of that gone already.
But long term, where do they fit them all in? Because none of them are going to be happy not playing. So
someone might move on.
Someone might move on. Who knows? Time will tell.
Well, that's the top end. Down the bottom end, and Swinton pit Batley to move 2 points. I repeat, 2 points behind Halifax.
You can't even say bottom end with Swinton anymore now, can you?
Oh, hang on. So Swinton are in the bottom end, but Halifax are getting dragged into a relegation
battle. To be fair,
you are a
I know we mentioned Swinton a lot, and that's partly my fault, but what Stuart Little has done there is phenomenal, really. Considering where they were last season, where they're playing that playoff final against Workington to stay up, that's... Yeah.
Where they were earlier on in the season, because they weren't very good at the start
Five
of the year.
5 points clear. 5 points clear. Brilliant.
And they're doing a lot of retention. They've kept Matty Ashton today. He's been fantastic. He is pure entertainment. He's electric. And I'm surprised that a Super League club hasn't snapped him up, to be honest, because he's got some serious talent, that lad.
Well, Dewsbury also won at the weekend. They beat Barrow, and Widnes eased the pressure a tad with a win over Rochdale. League One, some big games last weekend. Whitehaven battled to beat title rivals Oldham, while Newcastle leapfrogged over the North Manchester side by defeating Hunslet in South Leeds. A lot of compass stuff going on there, wasn't there? And just like that, Doncaster move into fourth with a win at West Wales, whilst moving 3 points to be from the playoffs. We've got the North Wales Crusaders, who won against Workington Town. Yeah. Slowly getting on
Didn't
with
they
things.
They beat Whitehaven a couple of weeks ago as well.
Yes, they did, at the Recreation Ground.
Yeah, fair play, Anthony Murray. Yeah. They had a horrendous start, didn't they?
Getting rid of...
Keighley didn't play this week.
Leon Price hasn't particularly gone well for working, has it?
Transitional year now.
But why get rid of Leon if...
Well, I mean, they got... Let's be honest, the clubs in League One have all been panicking about Ottawa and New York. If they come up, that's as promotion hopes gone another couple of years. But it just hasn't worked for the clubs. Because Newcastle got rid of Jason Payne, still unfairly, two games in.
Yeah.
But when all said and done, Simon Finnegan's gone in there and the... currently second, and if I was a betting man, which I'm not, I'd put money on them to win the league. Now, even though Whitehaven are 2 points ahead, I mean, they're just they just look good, don't they?
Yeah. Newcastle's on the bye this week, aren't they? Whitehaven are at Doncaster, so it could fall into Newcastle's hands a little bit more by this week.
And finally, in the Battle of the South, a great win for Coventry Bears at the London Scholars. Yeah. So there we go. Ever since that interview in Rugby League World.
Plummeted now, aren't they?
Spooker. That's almost it for this week's show. But listeners might remember a month or so ago, we were joined by Mike Rylands to discuss Carcassonne's win over Saint-Estève in the French Cup final. Well, the two went back head-to-head this week in the Championship final, with Saint-Estève taking revenge. Here's Mike Rylands with more.
The Championship final was a total turnaround, because if you remember, the Cup final 3 weeks earlier saw Carcassonne in absolutely dominant mood against Saint-Estève Trescathelon. And there was no way the Catalans were ever going to come back in that game. And although the score really didn't show the extent to which Carcassonne dominated it, believe you me, it was a very strong performance. And the same thing happened in the Championship final in the first half, where Carcassonne established a strong lead. And again, we thought there's no way the Catalans are ever going to come back into this game. And yet, amazingly, they scored two tries within the first 3 minutes, and that really seemed to set them on the trail of a comeback, which, of course, they did. And there was a total turnaround. Carcassonne looked tired. They looked powerful in the first half, but tired in the second half, started making mistakes, indiscipline crept in, and the young Catalan side just took control. It was a total surprise, really. Whether they coped better with the heat, no one will ever know. It did get a little bit cooler in the second half, but boy, was it hot in that first half.
I mean, that's been the main talking point in France the last couple of weeks, obviously, with the heat. And we all heard about Bradford's trip to Toulouse on the weekend. I mean, how did the players handle that heat for the Championship final?
We had two water breaks for a start, where you saw players putting wet towels over their heads and stuff like that. The commitment that both teams showed was absolutely amazing, given the conditions, because it kicked off in temperatures of somewhere around about 36, 37. It had been 40 earlier in the day and in the days leading up to it as well. And I never ceased to be amazed about the commitment and the genuine athletic effort that these players put into matches, when everybody else is sitting in the stands fanning themselves and sweltering and thinking, I'm glad it's not me out there.
Absolutely, yes.
I did, in fact, after the game, speak to Federation President Marc Palanque and just asked him as a way into asking him further questions, would he have liked to have played in temperatures like that? And all I got back was, we did play in temperatures like that in the past, but really, I can't remember any. The previous year's Championship final was around about 30 degrees. I do remember previous finals being played in similar temperatures, but I don't think there's been anything like that, to be honest. And it really doesn't justify starting the season in November and finishing it in late June, even though they've announced for next season that they will bring forward the start of the Championship to mid-November. But that doesn't really make that much difference, I wouldn't have thought. Everybody says the same thing. Those people who've been around a while say that, you know, we're kicking off far too late and ending the season far too late as well. Because let's not forget, these are not professional players we're talking about. Most of them have got jobs they have to do and they're training around it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Marc Palanque there, and he spoke with Steve Brady in last week's paper as well. And you probably spoke about the same things, in all fairness, just about how the season has been. He wants to grow Elite Un and get Toulouse Olympic and Catalan Dragons supporters to buy more into the domestic game. I mean, it has been a good season. I mean, what's your take on where the competition can go to next?
Well, I mean, everybody would agree that it would be nice if Toulouse and the Catalan Dragons supporters did get behind their reserve team, but it just isn't happening. I mean, even if the Catalans get to a final, as they did, we hardly saw anybody from Perpignan there to support their team, which was a massive shame. So it's all very well saying, yeah, we want Toulouse and Catalan supporters to get behind them, but it's crying into the desert, basically. And as for growing the elite competition, again, that's something we would like to see. But I don't see the evidence of it in terms of what the federation is doing. Because the championship final should be the climax to the season. And there was very little evidence of it, apart from the fact that the juniors were also playing. They kicked off at about 10 o'clock, by the way, that evening. And there isn't this sense that, you know, we're going to make this competition into something great. Again, it's an uphill struggle when you've got two French teams playing in British competitions at a higher level, or perceived higher level in the case of Toulouse. And yet, the entertainment value of the competition is as great as you would find anywhere. You know, okay, then maybe make more mistakes. But it's also less predictable to watch, and you see some great stuff. And people who do go and watch it are very keen to applaud it. What they need to do is to rally round individual clubs and find out how they can market their game better within their own community. That's where you need to start, at grassroots level, and forget about all these highfalutin competitions elsewhere in the country, or even regional competitions that nobody is really interested in.
I was going to say, I mean, it's been it's kind of like a similar conversation what's been happening here in England with League One and Championship clubs. That I mean, he does mention the fact that the clubs are starting to create bridges. This is a direct quote: starting to create bridges between the clubs and schools, you know, and allowing themselves to be part of the communities. That's basically what's happening here in England with various clubs like the Newcastle Thunder, for example, and that kind of it's a no brainer, and it's definitely something for the future. That
it absolutely is, yeah. And we should never have really lost this connection between clubs and their communities. It wasn't lost in some places where it has continued, but others, you know, it seems as almost as if rugby league clubs are surviving in a kind of vacuum, when really each club gets a grant from the local council, and the local council ought to be saying, well, in order for you to continue to receive this grant, we want you to do such and such a thing in the community. There are lots of ways of exploring this relationship, but at the moment it's not happening to the degree that we'd like to see.
And for the future then, I mean, Mike, this is where I'm going to let you do some blue sky thinking. I mean, what apart from the link with the communities and that kind of thing, where would you like to see the French competition head towards? I mean, I know Martin talks about the big cities like Montpellier and Marseille and Lyon. Wouldn't it be good if they were a bit more visible? Do you think that's a possible angle for the future as well, for the elite competition?
Well, there has been talk of a club in Montpellier joining Elite One, if not for next season, the following season. I'm a bit sceptical about that, actually, because you need structures in place, obviously. Otherwise, nothing is going to survive. You need the money behind it, and you're in a very difficult competition. You are in difficult competition with other sports within that big city. Lyon apparently are thinking about rejoining Elite One in about 3 years' time, because they've just got new people on board, which would be good to see again. But once more, you need the structures in place, and there are lots of kids in the Lyon area who are introduced to the game through the initiatives that go on there, but it's not really followed through in the way that you would like to see. So yes, it would be great to have big cities involved again, as happened in the 1950s. But like rugby union, rugby in France seems to thrive in terms of participation by players, seems to thrive more in small towns and villages than it does in big cities, with the possible exception of Toulouse, let's say. So yeah, it is an ideal to work towards, but I think it's not one that we need to really put a great deal of time, effort and money into, unless those structures are in place. And that's the important thing.
And finally, then, Mike, just you know, just to finish things off, talking about Santa Stev and you know the season they've had, plus the season Carcassonne have had, something definitely to build upon for next year. I mean, what's your take on what the season's going to look like next year and who the runners and riders are going to be?
For next year, I don't think that there's going to be that much change between what we have had this season and for the previous five or six. That's to say, all the teams in the Aude department, that's Carcassonne, Limoux and Lézignan, will continue to put forward strong competition. Catalans as well, of course, because they've got virtually the pick of the best youngsters coming through with a few older hands to guide them. And we did see some cracking young players in that championship final, as we have done throughout the season. So Albi will also make a bit of a challenge. I think Villeneuve will too, I guess. Saint-Gaudens and Toulouse have both got new coaches on board. So there's lots of things in the mix there for next season, but it would be difficult to dislodge those four teams who competed in the semi-finals this year. That's to say, those three from the Aude plus the Catalan Dragons reserves. And as I say once more, it's a great competition to watch, and it's just a shame that more people don't appreciate it.
Mike Ryland's there. Big thank you to Mike for joining us, and we'll have more on the French League at some point when that season starts again in November. But just before we go, any bits of housekeeping, anything else that needs to be raised, anything that's burning in your brains, just where you go, I want to get this out in the open.
Just
Matthew.
In case anyone didn't know, I went to Toronto.
And a new face doing the promo ad for Backchat.
Ron Knox, yeah.
Yeah.
Might watch it this week.
Alex, before you go, just a mention for all the coverage from the NRL.
Yeah, well, of course, last Origin there wasn't any NRL, but this week there is a full NRL lineup this week alongside Origin. No game tomorrow on Thursday, but there are two on Friday, three on the Saturday, and three on Sunday as well. And
oh, that'll never catch on spreading the games across the weekend, will it?
I know.
So, how did they do that turnaround, though? How did they manage
Get on with it, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. They just get on with it.
Isn't it a bigger country as well, Alex? The travelling involved.
But some of the Origin players play Wednesday, Friday, which I think is insane. I think that's absolutely insane.
Crack on.
And speaking of cracking, Aaron, what's coming up in The Guardian over the weekend? Come on.
I can't commit so early. Oh, there's a couple of good ideas floating around. Let me just say that. I can't commit so early in the week, but I am looking forward to watching Halifax v Widnes on the Our League app on Sunday.
Do you know what's funny? do you know what's funny? He's adamant.
Actually,
This has just reminded me, and Alex is my witness, for the first time ever...
Don't bring Alex into
For the first time ever, Aaron admitted today in the office in front of five people that he hates Halifax.
That's not true.
did he? Alex Davis, did he or did he not say
Aaron,
that?
The side or the town? Because it's got the Eureka.
Did he?
There.
I mean, no, I'm the Eureka.
You said that.
What I would say is... Great nightlife, great pubs, great culture, like the Peace Hall. Peace Hall's brilliant.
Look at him backtracking now. Look at him.
He asked me whether it were the side or the town, and I'm just explaining what's good about the town.
Unbelievable.
I can neither confirm nor.
I'm watching Bradford City v Liverpool.
That's it for this week's Total Rugby League show. A big thank you to Mr. Aaron Bauer. Alex Davis, big thank you. Matthew Shaw, welcome back. Nice tan. Mike Rylands, thank you too for joining us. TotalRL.com, the place to go for all the breaking news. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.